Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Prepared to Diet Anytime show. This is a quote from Mark Twain. The fear of death follows from the fear of life. A man who lives fully is prepared to diet anytime. I may have mispronounced that, but that's anyway, is what it's about. And we are talking about diet because we have from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, our special guest, recurrent guest on Health Matters, Jean Jones, registered dietitian, manager of clinical nutrition services at St. Clair. And she brings us always her learners. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Tony.
And as always, bringing with her one of her support staff. This is Riley Loy, a dietetic intern from the University of Kentucky. Hi, Riley.
Hey.
Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. And with me from the University of Kentucky, Communications Infrastructure Manager Rick Phillips will tell you how to access Health Matters on the web.
Hey, Tony, you know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's right, WMKY.org, Moorhead State Public Radio's website. If you haven't been there, we recommend you do because you need to go to the Health Matters section and see the list of shows, read what's going on about each show. There's a little short summary there. He tries to make them a little funny, so they're enjoyable to read. And then at the bottom of it, there is a link to the audio. You can listen to it. If you have if you like the podcast, there's a link there where you can get the podcast and have Health Matters delivered to you automatically. Usually goes up about 4 days after the first airing of the show. So we typically air on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. That means somewhere around Tuesday, whenever our engineer decides to have a good cup of coffee and push that file up to the internet, then at some point after that cup of coffee, you will get that file delivered to your device so that you can listen to it on your way home. After that, we ask you to interact with Health Matters. Go to facebook.com/HMRadioShow. There you'll find our fan page. I promise you, we don't like calling it a fan page. It's just what Facebook calls them. Go to the fan page. There you can leave us comments. You can certainly give us feedback, tell us what you want to hear about on a show, tell us what you liked or didn't like about a show. We prefer the like, but we'll certainly listen to the don't likes as well. Those really kind of tear at Tony. He really torments himself over the bad feedback.
Rick, I don't know what you're talking about.
As I'm saying, we don't get any. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, you know, we appreciate you taking it easy on us out there. But Facebook.com/HMRadioShow is where you can certainly interact with the show.
Our sponsor for today's show, Swimming Pool Safety. And I've got this quote from comedian Dimitri Martin. Swimming is a confusing sport. Sometimes you do it for fun. Other times you do it not to die. And when I'm swimming, sometimes I'm not sure which one it is. We do this, first of all, because it is the meteorological summer spell after the Memorial Day weekend. And it also, we do this in honor of our guest, Jean Jones, who sometimes swims not to die and rarely swims for fun. So these are our Health Matters summer swimming tips. Number one, before you or your child gets in the pool, inspect the pool and check the drains. If you do not see the drains properly covered, properly closed, if this pool looks cracked, if it doesn't look like it's being well maintained, don't swim. Do not swim in it. We'll talk about this in our second fractional portion, but the CDC did some inspections of public swimming pools and it did not go well. Number two, perhaps the most important thing we can tell you for your young girls, get their hair up before they go in the pool. That long flowing hair tangles in the drains and can cause them to be submerged. It also, when they're going in the lake, it can get tangled up in brush. You do not need long, free-flowing hair, as pretty as it looks underwater. Long, free-flowing hair is actually a danger for your girls. So put the hair up. Number three, supervise the children closely, even when lifeguards are present. Keep a charged cell phone by your home pool. Look for life-saving equipment and make sure it is there. We're talking about the long poles that the victims can grab or rings that can be thrown. Number four, maybe a surprise here. The CDC's advice, visit a pool supply or hardware store and stock up on test strip that can check pH and disinfectants in the water. We'll explain more about this in our second fractional portion, but a strong recommendation from the CDC, do not assume that the pool is being properly maintained. Test it yourself before your children actually go in. Number five, health officials say people who have had diarrhea shouldn't swim. Make your young kids take hourly bathroom breaks to make sure that they don't contaminate the pool. Number six, don't swallow pool water. Number six, don't swallow pool water. I'm just going to stop right there. Seven, protect your head, neck, and spine. Don't dive into unfamiliar waters. Feet first time, every time. Number eight, don't drink. Alcohol and swimming don't mix. Alcohol doesn't mix with a lot of things, you know? I've heard that over and over again. But alcohol and swimming, certainly don't mix. 9, learn to swim, please. 10, don't mess with electrical storms. If you can see it, flee it. If you can hear it, clear it. That's the National Lightning Safety Institute motto, and it's certainly our motto for summer swimming. That is our sponsor, Swimming Pool Safety. Those 10 tips, and we'll talk more about what we found about swimming pools in the CDC inspection on our second fractional portion. And we start off with Riley, because Riley is looking right across the table from me right now. Riley, you have, you've been at St. Clair for a brief period of time.
Yes, a week and a half now.
A week and a half, okay. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up?
Okay, I'm from Columbia, Kentucky. I was raised on a beef cattle farm. So I'm a farm girl, and then I've recently graduated from University of Kentucky with my degree in dietetics. I'm on my final rotation and on my way to becoming a registered dietitian.
Why did you decide to become a dietitian?
I've been in competitive dance since I was 3 years old. So
wait,
the health
that doesn't wait. This is not the way I thought this would start. You see, Rick, you heard this.
I dance all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Once again, now I'm not sure this. The far
I'll
side
teach
of the
you
table
to ask me anything.
Okay, fair enough. So, all right, back to this, Riley. So, all right, so we got this. So, why you became a dietitian starts with the fact you're a competitive dancer.
Yeah.
Okay, go.
I don't think we've ever had a dancer before, have we?
No.
What am I? Chopped liver?
Rick is passing himself off as a dancer. Okay, fine. And by the way, we will film this and put it on our Facebook fan page.
Do
the dance off between Rick Phillips
you are the
and Riley Lloyd.
No.
Yeah. All right.
I want to see the dance off. I'm going to do that.
I danced at my wedding.
And that was really
27 years ago.
All right, fair enough. Okay. So, Riley, back to this. Competitive dance. How did that fuel your interest in dietetics?
I just like the health aspect of it. And then as you get older, and I was doing marching band, you kind of see how nutrition benefits you in that aspect, especially with the heat. I found out I was a major at UK. I almost went to Transy, actually, for exercise science, but I love nutrition.
Yeah, so, and of the things that influence you, growing up next to thousands of pounds of beef had no influence at all.
Oh, I love beef. I only eat beef from home.
Yeah, but as far as the production of food and so forth, this was really a consumer. This is about your body and making sure that things go in, the right things go in it. Okay. And as a career, you how did you make that decision between exercise science and dietetics? Why did you make it the way you did?
I like that I get to say I major in food.
Did you?
So do I.
I think it's
you're
just
no help. You know that.
But I think it's something we take for granted so often, how it fuels our body, and then you have the rise in obesity in America. I mean, it's everywhere.
Did you cook in high school?
Yes.
You did. But she hesitated. So clearly,
I mostly baked.
You baked.
Yeah.
But you were not in charge of family meals and things like that. So this was something you did for yourself. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And then, again, the exercise part of it, by the way, for those of you that are right now may not be able to actually see your radio, Riley appears to be physically fit, I would say. She would fit the mold of what you think of as a dancer. She is a thin person. And so a dietitian dancer, I would say, yeah, this is what you'd expect a person who's a dietitian dancer to look back. But you said you still exercise regularly, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I'm training for a half marathon right now.
Okay. And then in doing that, as a dietitian, how does that affect your training? What are you doing to give you the edge for that half marathon?
I think a lot of it goes into pre and post recovery with what you're consuming in your body. I mean, let's get real. If you have a McDonald's Big Mac before you go for a run, you're not going to be finishing that run.
Say what you will. But when I was in the Army, our colonel, not kidding you, our full bird colonel, we ran a 10K. We were done at 9 in the morning, and right after that, he started drinking Lowenbrow.
Yeah. Well, now in terms of recovery.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's right after. He's literally, like, he threw the finish line, sat down.
And I guess you've heard the theories about chocolate milk and some other things.
That's my favorite, chocolate milk after I work out.
And do you use that? I was always a little bit skeptical about it.
I like it. I mean, it has the right amount of carbs, protein. Okay. For you to help rebuild
really
muscles.
Good.
Yeah.
I have nothing wrong with chocolate milk.
I was going to say, you won me over.
Yeah.
Enough
it's
chocolate
sweet.
Milk, I might consider running.
Yeah.
Yes. Here, run to the milk, Rick.
You can't
run
go
the
wrong
milk.
There.
Dangle it like a carrot.
Yeah.
Yeah, put the milk 5K from me, okay?
Okay. And then where do you see yourself going from here? Are you interested in the sort of work that Gene does at the hospital?
Or? Yeah, I never really saw myself doing clinical, but this past week and a half has really changed my outlook in it, especially seeing from a bigger hospital rather than my hometown small hospital. But I also like the idea of sports dietetics and maybe like working with the agriculture part of it because that's how I was raised.
There are obviously a lot of career opportunities within the field of dietitians. And not that I know anything about it, but still, I would surmise so.
You know, it's really interesting to listen to the interns because years ago it was like sports, 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 and now it's more toward agriculture. I've noticed that's the trend.
As we lose the family farm, maybe there's more money or less money in it. I don't know in terms of food production. I'm not really certain. I appreciate you being here, Riley. We will call upon you to raise some. I think the main thing is Riley's next to Rick, and if she can manage to keep Rick on task and keep him engaged, then that would certainly be well enough. A little bit of time left, Rick. Do you know a guy named Henry Heimlich?
No.
Okay.
I can only guess what he created, though.
Henry Heimlich is the originator of the Heimlich maneuver. And he, in fact, is in Cincinnati now. This is a place called the Dupre House. He is age 96. Henry Heimlich, the originator of the Heimlich maneuver. And he created this in 1974, learning that thousands of people died every year from choking. We used to call that the Cafe Coronary. I don't know if you remember that or not. We did. And so he created that. He published it in Emergency Medicine. It's called Pop Goes the Cafe Coronary. And what his idea was, if we could somehow put enough force in the upper epigastric area to blow air back up the esophagus, then we might be able to clear the food out. I mean, it comes when you squeeze the upper abdomen and lower chest area, you're going to get air pushed back through the trachea and the esophagus, and so whatever's lodged in the upper airway might be cleared. They published that. And this was contrary to what the custom of the time. He took his scientific research and actually made it public. He wanted everybody to know about this technique. According to the National Library of Medicine, if a person is choking, first ask, can you speak? If they can speak and they're coughing, leave them alone. That's still the best thing. Let them cough it out. But if they cannot speak, they seem to be losing consciousness. If they're sitting or standing, position yourself behind them. Reach your arms around the waist. Make a fist with one. Put the hand of the other arm over the fist and then push in very hard to force that air out. If they're down flat, straddle the person facing their head and push your fist upward and inward in a movement similar to the way you would do it if they're actually up. And that actually has saved lives. Saved President Ronald Reagan, New York Mayor Ed Koch, and Cher.
Man, I've been Heimlich before.
Have you?
Yes, I have. I literally inhaled a piece of popcorn.
With only a minute to go, she tells us that bomb.
Absolutely great. No, tell me your Heimlich story.
I inhaled a piece of popcorn.
And you could not speak?
No.
And the Heimlich made it,
yes.
Did it pop out?
Popped that thing right out of there.
Popped your popcorn, and did it go across the room?
It did. Just flew right out. Poof.
Oil poppers, hot air poppers, and gene poppers.
Absolutely. So, we've got some more to talk about. We're going to talk about problems with the American Heart Association's dietary recommendations, as well as stomach balloons in our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Prepared to Diet Anytime show. Again, for the quote from Mark Twain, a man who lives fully is prepared to diet anytime. With us to talk about diet and dietary issues from St. Clair Regional Medical Center, registered dietitian Gene Jones. Hey, Gene.
Hi, Tony.
And also from the University of Kentucky, dancer, athlete, half marathoner, and UK dietetic intern Riley Loy. Hey, Riley.
Hey.
Our sponsor for the second time, swimming pool safety. This quote from Dimitri Martin: swimming is a confusing sport because sometimes you do it for fun, sometimes you do it not to die, and when I'm swimming, I'm not sure which one. And as I mentioned last time, when Jean is swimming, she in fact has certainty about why she would be swimming. This from the CDC. This was in the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly, the May edition, talking about swimming pools. You know, in swimming pools, they have blossomed in the 20th century. Once we figured out about polio, once we were allowed to congregate together, swimming, the fourth most popular sports activity in the U.S., more than 50 million Americans over the age of six, according to the census, the last census, went swimming at least six times a year. 50 million Americans, six times a year. Public facilities increased in size. You may remember that. They used to be small. Now you have these massive wave pools that accommodate thousands. Also, indoor facilities, facilities that are open year-round, a large explosion of hot tubs. That's probably not the right word to say, explosion of hot tubs, but certainly we have a lot more hot tubs than we used to have. There have been, since 1978, 650 aquatic facility-associated outbreaks, says the CDC. Largest was a water park in Ohio. Chlorine mixed with sweat and urine in the pool to create chloramines, and they had 665 cases of eye and respiratory tract problems among patrons and lifeguards. Over the past 10 years, 4,000 deaths a year, drowning, many of them in pools, and drowning the leading cause of injury deaths in children ages 1 to 4, half of them occur in swimming pools. During 2003 to 2012, that 10-year period, pool chemical-associated health events resulted in 3,000 to 5,000 visits in U.S. emergency departments every year, half the patients under age 18. Probably not fatal things, but a lot of respiratory injuries, eye injuries, and so forth with pool chemicals. So the CDC, in response to these increased size pools, increased number of pools, they created the Network for Aquatic Facility Inspection Surveillance. They call them NAFIS. That was created in 2013, and they're publishing the first inspections, and this is not good. The CDC inspectors, they inspected pools in Arizona, California, Florida, New York, and Texas. These pools are a sizable percentage of the U.S.'s total aquatic facilities. These are big pool states. They found at least one health or safety violation at 80% of the public pools, hot tubs, and water playground. 80% had at least one violation. Now, that violation could be that they didn't have safety equipment nearby. If you don't drown, you'll never know the safety equipment. It's perfectly fine. But they had a violation. They said they made 84,000 inspections. One in eight of the inspections found problems so serious they had to close the pool immediately. Ooh. So again, 80% had a problem. 10%, one in eight, they closed the pool immediately. Most common were pH level, 15% of routine inspections, it was off. The safety equipment, 13%, didn't have the life rings and the poles. And disinfectants, 12% of the time. So again, one in eight pools they visited, in fact, did not have the right level of disinfectants. So again, the CDC says get a pool supplier, hardware store, go there and stock up on test strips. The pH should be between 7.2 and 7.8. The chlorine should be at least one part per million in pool water. So that's really the genesis of this. We worry about girls getting their hair tangled up in the drains, a very common method of young girls drowning in pools and hot tubs. We worry about safety equipment. We worry about parents who send their kids to the pool and don't actually monitor them when these children are very young. But also, what we found from the CDC is the pools are not necessarily safe places anyway. Do not assume that because a pool is open in the state of Kentucky or wherever you live, that it is being properly maintained. The CDC recommends you test it yourself before you allow your children in it, and it makes sense because these pool outbreaks can be pretty serious. That's our sponsor, Swimming Pool Safety. It is summertime. Think about safety at the swimming pool. Now, we talked about Heimlich, and I mentioned I wanted to talk about stomach balloons. Gene, you know, we've been looking at stomach balloons for a while. I remember many years ago, we've been on the air now since 2003, you came on, and we talked about a balloon that you put in with an endoscope into the stomach, and you blow the balloon up. And the idea is it's supposed to permanently make your stomach, or it's supposed to make your stomach smaller as long as the balloon's there.
It takes up space.
Yeah, and that makes you fill up more quickly. Well, there's a new wrinkle in the balloon industry. This is something called Obalon, and this was reported, actually, at Shelby Sullivan, who's the director of endoscopy at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, reported this at a meeting in San Diego. You swallow a balloon. It's in a capsule, so it's actually swallowable, and it apparently has a tube attached to it. And so you swallow the balloon, and it goes down, and the tube's attached. Then the healthcare person fills it up with nitrogen, and 750 cubic centimeters, that's about a cup of gas. You take a second balloon at 3 weeks and a third at 9 or 12 weeks, and that fills your stomach up again with, I guess at the end of the 9 week period, you've got 3 cups of gas in your stomach in these balloons. Mm-hmm. At 6 months, they go in with a scope and they take all the balloons out. No incision.
Well, why do they take them out?
Well, The problem they have with those balloons that were put in with the endoscope is eventually something plastic in your stomach starts to erode against the stomach wall.
I was going to say something about the plastic.
Yeah, and so I don't. They don't say, well, then when do you get your next treatment? That's it. That's all they know is it's 16 weeks.
Huh.
Says Jean, looking not that enthusiastic about the latest balloons.
Well, I'm not real crazy about plastic around the food that I eat. I don't know that I want it in my stomach.
Using the scope to take them out, 16 minutes, price probably around $1,500. Not been set, but that's where most of these systems are. And the trial that Dr. Sullivan did, 366 obese patients divided into two groups, half swallowed the balloons, half swallowed some capsules that didn't have balloons, 24 to 64 years old were the patients. The balloon group lost 6.8% of their weight. The group that swallowed the empty capsules, 3.6%. So maybe if you just doubled the empty capsules... Just keep swallowing placebo. Maybe you could get yourself up to the balloon group. Two-thirds lost at least 5% of their weight. That's a step forward, they said. So, you know, Gene.
Well, I like that, you know, it's like there are no incisions or anything. That's pretty cool. But I don't know. I don't like the plastic thing.
$1,500. You think
but $1,500, you know, because people that didn't have a lot of money, they could afford to do that. That's.
Yeah, you could do it. But, again, it's 16 weeks and long-term. The problem is there is no long-term this. You can't just keep balloons in your stomach.
No. Okay. Yeah. So I don't know what I think about that. That'd be like, you know, going on some fad diet and losing some weight and then gaining it all back again.
Tony, if they filled them with helium, you could be a little lighter on your feet.
I was thinking about that myself. I thought,
when you said lighter on your feet, you're still thinking about the dance-off, aren't you? Thinking, okay.
Hey,
let me fill me with helium, and then let's just see Riley match me dancing on the ceiling.
It was competitive dancing.
Just think of the fun, though, if one of them popped and you could talk like Donald Duck. You know what I mean?
Well, the nitrogen, I guess, if it pops, there's nothing there. But you do wonder if all of a sudden you just hear this pop.
And then you're hungry.
Man, I could use a pizza right now.
And boy, do you know, it feels like pretty bad when a balloon pops and hits you. Can you imagine if that popped inside your stomach? Ouch.
For the sponsors, the Obalon people, we are not insinuating we are imagining here. This is a kind of free thought association.
Well, we're being funny.
Yeah.
At least we think we're being funny.
Yeah. So, Riley, have you had any experience with weight loss devices? What's the situation in the UK?
We've not really covered these devices. We've mainly covered the fad diets. But in a way, I agree with Jean that it could, in a way, be considered as one.
Yeah.
Because short-term, are you making the positive changes with your lifestyle once you get it?
Why? I mean, your stomach's full of balloons. Who needs
blood on your
You have made it
to
your stomach with air.
Balloons. I mean, what could be more positive than that? I'm just asking.
You have to prepare for when the balloons come out, okay? Because if you start stuffing your face with Big Macs again. Well,
yeah,
we really didn't harm the Big Macs,
but you remember, Gene, I mean, they used to wire jaws shut.
Oh, yeah.
You don't even, and that, you don't have an incision or anything. You know, I guess you go to an orthodontist. I don't know who wires jaws shut. But they would wire your jaw shut so that all you could do was sip on soup. That was it.
Soup?
Yeah, or...
Milkshakes.
Milkshakes.
I always wondered about that because, you know, they would get...
Is that all it takes to get that?
Well, when somebody has to have their jaws wired shut for some orthodontic procedure, not for weight loss, we feed them, like, milkshakes and things like that, you know.
And you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Oh.
See, you're contributing.
But, I mean, I don't think that that was a very effective weight loss thing, but they really did used to do that.
Yeah,
they
did. And you wonder, well, then why have we gone to this? I suppose the nice thing about, I know why we've gone to this, is so you can talk and look like a normal human being with balloons in your
stomach. Well, I think it's non-invasive. I mean, by our standards, it's non-invasive.
Non-invasive,
right.
Yeah.
But wiring the jaw shut was pretty simple, you know.
And less expensive, too, than, you know.
If you think about it, you could wear a football helmet to a supper table and you do a similar thing. You know, you can't get it past the mouth guard. Yeah.
I've never worn a football helmet. I don't know.
Well, all right.
And you call yourself. No.
I was saying, but when I came to Moorhead, the wiring the jaw was still being done. It's kind of as a fad. This was in the 1970s and early
19.
Yeah, they did. But I came here in the 1980s, so it was, you know, it was just kind of starting to fade. But I did have some people that were on amphetamines and thyroid pills that were prescribed in an effort to make them lose weight. Weight loss has just been a stepchild of medical care, and Riley. I expect your generation to fix this and start to actually scientifically look at things. My way of thinking, we'll end this discussion. The balloons are, it's the same problem we've always had. You can do about anything for 6 weeks. And
then you get right back.
Yeah. Unless there is some kind of behavioral change as Riley mentioned, you're not going to get anywhere just having balloons in your stomach. Mm-hmm. That's not going to make you a normal person. Speaking of dietary recommendations, Gene, we got to talk about the American Heart Association. First, a little bit of past information. The American Heart Association, there was concern about cholesterol levels and about dietary saturated fat. There were several studies that were not very well done that indicated that saturated fat, in fact, raised your body's cholesterol and raised your risk of heart disease. And so the American Heart Association, many years ago, probably once again in the 1980s, I'm thinking, they said, well, it is time for us to get serious about diet. We need to get away from saturated fats. We'll use some unsaturated fat, but honestly, the big thing is we need to eliminate fat from the American diet. And Gene, I know you were a part of low-fat dieting. The recommendations coming from the American Diabetic Association and the American Heart Association.
Yes. Not fat-free, but low-fat, yes.
Yeah. And there was a guy named, I will never forget it, Dean Ornish.
Oh, God.
Ornish, he had his diet. The paper, the methods section started, I will never forget these words, and I quote from a paper in the 1980s, he said, participants were allowed unlimited access to lettuce.
Yeah.
Because I remember I stopped reading right there, and I just sat and thought about what it would mean if you had unlimited access to lettuce. That would not give me joy.
I kind of like lettuce, but I want something to go with it.
Well, nutritionally, I mean, Riley.
And if there's nothing, you got to have, just had a nice
salad.
What
do you put on your salad?
But lettuce itself, nutritionally, is not that.
No, it's not that.
If you're going to, you could have unlimited access to cardboard, I suppose.
Well, I guess it depends on what kind of lettuce it is.
Okay, fair enough. And to give Dean Ornish credit, Dean is a very good nutrition person.
Yes.
He uses good lettuce, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure he does. Now, that was a much more complicated program, though. It wasn't just his diet, as I recall, was almost, it might have been fat-free. It was really close to, if nothing,
Yeah, and he was able to reverse some coronary artery disease by just eliminating fat.
But they didn't do just that. You also had to exercise. You had to, do relaxation therapy.
Meditate.
It was a complete, you had to meditate. Mm-hmm. And they really did, reverse cardiovascular disease. It was
did they hold off these changes after the experiment?
Well, you kind of had to make a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
You sort of changed.
That's all you ever say.
That's what it is.
Your broken record.
It's because if you don't change it, then you just go right back to where you were.
Well, we've made an industry out of not having to change, right? I mean, that's where all the money is figuring out how not to change.
Yeah, let me do what I want. But the American Heart Association, back to this, their campaign against dietary fat changed the nature of the American diet. All of a sudden, we substituted, in many cases, carbohydrates for fats.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just the American Heart Association and their, recommendations not to have saturated fat and a lot of fat, but it was also that the fad diets for weight reduction, the fat-free stuff. And you had all these, the food industry came up with all these fat-free products, and they substituted carb for it. For fat.
And many people do feel that fueled our diabetic, rising rates of diabetes, because we spent too much time eating carbs and we gave up on fats, which in fact were not as harmful as we initially thought. This is still being sorted out. I think still there's a little bit of evidence about unsaturated fats. What are you telling your patients now about saturated versus unsaturated?
We just had this conversation before we came in here. And, there really aren't any good, strong guidelines right now. It's sort of up in the air. I still tell people that, everything in moderation. You should have some fat. And I've always told people that they should have some fat because, you have to have some to be healthy. But just not huge amounts of it. You've got to really cut back. Most people could cut their fat intake in half and still need to cut some more. But, start there. And as far as saturated versus unsaturated, I think you need a blend. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a little bit of butter, But a little bit being the guide word there, I think that you need to lean more toward olive oil and kind of the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about the Mediterranean diet. Again, based on fish, nuts, not so much dairy products.
No.
Again, you talk about lifestyle. It's a plant-based diet, and it also involves taking your time at mealtimes.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, and so it is a different way of eating than most Americans are familiar with. The American Heart Association, again, has entered into dietary recommendations, this time with sodium, and is right now in the middle of a major battle on sodium. Most Americans eat 3,400 milligrams per day of sodium. That's 3.4 grams per day of sodium. The American Heart Association has recommended that we drop down to 1,500 milligrams. Now, Gene, when when I mention this. This is the sodium equivalent of unlimited access to lettuce, I think.
Well, you know, I mean, I haven't looked at their research. I don't know why they're recommending that, and they probably have very good reasons. But, you know, it's my job to teach people how to do things on a practical level. And let me just tell you, that's almost impossible to do.
Now, Riley, is this her just being set in her ways, or what do you think about a 1,500 milligram per day sodium?
It almost seems unrealistic in a way. I mean, how are you supposed to educate families, especially in lower income where you have limited options, especially stuff like, look at salmon. We always say, hey, eat that, but it's high in sodium. It's great in omega-3s.
You know, when I educate people about low sodium diets, I don't talk about like the sodium content of specific things like salmon or milk or whatever. You know, because the average person isn't going to be able to deal with that. They would have to look up everything they ate. I just talk about getting rid of the high sodium processed foods and snacks and not adding salt and, you know, that type of thing, and preparing foods without a lot of salt and how to make it taste good without that salt, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think you just need to minimize your intake of excess sodium, but I don't try to concentrate on the numbers so much because I think that just makes people miserable.
The idea is pretty controversial because it's pretty clear. I mean, your body has a lot of sodium in it. Your body uses the sodium for something. And so when you try to starve the sodium, the argument goes, you're going to cause problems. And there are studies on both sides of this issue. Very low is good. Very low is actually harmful. And the American Heart Association right now has decided to go with the very low is good. But certainly, Gene and Riley, it sounds like this is a very difficult diet to follow in the first place.
It is.
We can say, let me just make a couple statements. One is there's no reason to add salt to food.
No.
I mean, as a flavoring, you should find other flavorings that you like better because there's no reason to add it. Secondly, the packaged processed food, the symmetric meats, the food in a box.
The chips.
Yeah, many of those type of foods are very high in sodium.
Yeah. You don't need those things.
Yeah. But as you said, to get to 1,500, Riley, it sounds like then you would have to give up something good like salmon. No matter how it's prepared, it's going to be salty.
Yeah, there's some fish just that are naturally high in sodium.
And salmon is the one fish that I think I can really...
I love salmon. Mm-hmm.
I love our third fractional portion. We're going to take a break again. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Prepared to Diet Anytime show. Again, from Mark Twain, a man who lives fully is prepared to diet anytime.
I don't think that's the exact quote, Tony.
I know, but I just really like that. That may go up on my wall. I don't know. With us from the St. Clair Regional Medical Center, Manager of Clinical Nutrition Services, Dietitian to the Stars, Jean Jones. Hi, Jean.
Hi, Tony.
And also with her, supporting her every move, bringing the element, the artistic element of dance to our show. From the University of Kentucky, UK dietetic intern, Riley Loy. Hi, Riley.
Hey, Tony.
And the sponsor for today's show, for the final time, swimming pool safety. Reminding you, we're going to go back to our Health Matters top 10 summer swimming tips. Number one, inspect the pool before you allow your children to swim. Check for cracked towels. Make sure the drains are covered. Make sure this pool has been maintained. Two, if you have a girl or a long-haired hippie boy, put the hair up because that long flowing hair can get caught, and this can cause your child. We've seen it time and time again where a child in a hot tub, in a wading pool, and so forth. They get their hair caught in a drain in very shallow water, but they cannot pull their head up above water. Put the hair up. It is a safer way to swim. Number three, supervise children closely. Even when lifeguards are present, your child needs you in the water. Keep a charged cell phone by the pool. Look for this life-saving equipment, the reaching poles, the rings, and so forth, and make sure it's there. Four, remind you, the CDC's advice is to visit a pool supply or hardware store. Stock up on test strips that can measure pH and disinfectants. The pH should be between 7.2 and 7.8. Chlorine should be at least one part per million in pool water. And for bromine, if you're using that, it should be at least three parts per million in pool water. water. Number five, health officials say people who have had diarrhea should not swim. Take the young kids out for a bathroom break every hour or so. Don't let them contaminate the pool. Six, don't swallow pool water. Remember, if it gets in your eyes or goes up your nose, it's the same as swallowing pool water, so try to keep it out of the eyes and nose. Seven, protect your head, neck, and spine. Don't dive into unfamiliar waters. Feet first time. 8, don't drink. Alcohol and swimming do not mix. 9, learn how to swim. 10, don't mess with electrical storms. If you can see lightning or can hear lightning, it is time to leave the pool immediately. That is our sponsor, Swimming Pool Safety. It is summertime. Please take care of your youngins in the pool. That recommendation from Health Matters. Now, Gene and Riley. Rick, you're out on this one.
I'm out.
Okay. I've made that decision. We can turn his mic off, but this is the U.S. FDA finalized design for the nutrition facts label. This was a mighty battle, by the way, with the Sugar Association. I believe that's what they call themselves. And they have changed the food labels that you will see on your cereal boxes, on your foods that are packaged in the grocery store. A line that calls out added sugar. And they mentioned, according to USA Today, this research has shown that this increases your risk of heart disease, contributes to obesity and diabetes. The current labels only list sugar, which is a combination of added and natural sugar. So, Gene, Riley, explain to us what added sugar is and how it is different from sugar.
Well, some foods, you know, contain sugar naturally, like fruits, for example. You know, and added sugar would be a sugar that is added over and above what is there naturally. And I think it tends to lean toward sucrose, which is table sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is that still correct? I have to look at the young one over here. And I think it is really important to point out how much added sugar there is in a product, because sugar indeed does contribute to the development of a lot of chronic problems. But I think that it's just going to lead manufacturers to try to, like, you know, mask other sugars, because there are lots of other different kinds of sugars that you can put in food. And I don't think it really accounts for that. So, you know, they're going to be sweetening things with things like apple juice and agave and
pure cane extract.
Yeah, pure cane extract. Sugar.
Yeah. And again, you make sugar from cane. So when you say pure cane extract, that is, in fact, sugar.
Sounds fancy.
Yeah,
sounds,
it does. But your point is, if you put apple juice in and you don't make it taste too apple-y, you were able to add sweetness, sugar to it without actually triggering the added sugar
fructose
label.
Is a sugar. So, you know, let's say that, if the product is not fruit, you know, but you're adding fructose as a sweetener, then that's adding sugar.
Sure. You know, and there are some things like cranberries, for instance.
Yeah.
Cranberries are not very tasty.
You couldn't. They're too tart. You couldn't drink cranberry juice without some sugar added to it.
Yeah.
A lot of sugar
added.
A lot of sugar.
I mean, you're basically just getting it up to the level that everything else has in there naturally, you know.
But then you're gonna run afoul of this label, because you're going to have more added sugar than anything else, because you don't have any natural sugar in your cranberries. And Ocean Spray, by the way, opposed the labeling changes for that reason. They knew that they could not win an added sugar battle. A lot of other beverage manufacturers, cereal manufacturers and so forth, a lot of them were concerned about it as well. The second thing about the label, so this added sugar is a pretty big deal, and it's something you want to look at. How much sugar have they put to make things more palatable? And what numbers are we talking about? We measure it in grams. Do you have any sense of what would be a acceptable added sugar? Or I'm looking, I think I played Stump the Dietitian here.
It kind of depends upon what the food is.
I agree.
And I mean, like, I try to avoid a lot of extra added sugar, but, you know, I don't go around looking at the... Okay, I don't. I don't look at the label to see how many grams of sugar is in a product, because...
Holy smokes.
Well, I don't. I look at the total carb.
Riley's over here. Riley looks at labels, Gene.
I just know that I can't... No, but I mean, I just know that I can't eat a bunch of sweet
We see a new
stuff.
Generation of dietitians. Those who actually read the labels is taking over
America. I do read
the label.
I'm not looking at the sugar grams, per se. Because, you know, I just don't eat a lot of sweet stuff, and I know that I can't. And then... Other foods, well, I don't eat a lot of processed foods, and so it doesn't have a lot of added sugar.
Let's go to Riley, the future of dietary advice. So how do you use added sugars when you look at the label?
It's the first thing I look at. Like, I don't look at calories as much anymore.
Yet, it's as big as a man.
Yeah, why is it so big on the label? I feel like more sugar is the enemy than the calories.
So you're looking at, and you will... Then you is there some cutoff? You say, oh, I like this food, but I wouldn't eat this food because of added sugar?
Well, let's say, like, I'm having, like, a snack, like a little thing of yogurt. If it's above 10 grams of sugar, that's kind of – I think that when you get in the double digits, that's where the danger is.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, you also have to look at other things that are added that are really adding sugars that may not go into that number.
Right. So you, you're looking for the high fructose corn syrup, the apple juice, the
agave,
those things, which will not come in as added sugars. Then plus, but I don't know if cane extract would or not, but
I don't know if they're just using that term to make it sound more, quote, natural, you know.
Because anything can be natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, sugar's natural, for God's sake. You know, but I think that the ingredient list needs to be more prominent.
A little bigger font.
Because I don't think that, I think that the calories, I know what to do with those calories, and Riley does. You do, but not everybody. That's not really that meaningful to everybody. I mean, if you don't know how many calories you need, and if you don't add up all of your calories, then I just don't think that's the most important chunk of information there.
Gotcha. Also, on these labels, the serving size will actually be more proportionate to what we eat. For instance, ice cream they mentioned goes to 2/3 of a cup, not half a cup. You know, one of the tricks on food labeling is if you make the portion size small enough, anything looks pretty healthy.
Yeah, because the numbers look smaller, and I think that they should make the portion sizes consistent, and like it's like, you know, like foods should have the same portion size so that you can compare things better. But I don't know if what they mean by making the portion sizes more realistic means that they're gonna, like, you know, go from a cup to 2 cups of cereal or whatever, just based upon what people are eating these days. I don't think that's a very good idea, because, you know, you look at a cookbook that was published back in the 50s, and you'll have a recipe and it would make like 20 servings, let's say. And then if you look at that same cookbook that is published today, that very same recipe with the exact ingredient list and amounts will feed, you know, 3 servings. So I'm exaggerating. But
no, but I understand that, because for me, a package of Oreos, for instance, the serving size is 1.
One package.
Who stops in the middle of a package of Oreos? I'm just throwing that out there.
Come on, Tony, let's be realistic. But really, 2 nights, they're gone.
I don't understand it. So you Oreos last a month.
They last
at your
as
house.
Long as the milk holds up.
Right?
If you got plenty of milk, that whole thing's gone.
Yeah, but serving size Oreos, you got to realize that's an exception to the whole serving size thing, because there is no, basically, it's, I mean, how many packages of Oreos do you have? That's the only question.
Well, let's be honest. Lay's used the jingle.
You can't eat just one.
And that should have been for Oreos or Girl Scout cookies. I mean,
well, that's true of any of that Scout stuff cookies. Because, boy, that junk is, I swear to God, it's like they put something in there that's addictive.
Sugar.
Maybe they did sugar, right? You know, but.
And you can't say no to those girls when you're going in the grocery store.
Oh, yeah,
selling
I can.
You those
Actually, I
oh,
can.
Oh, I can't. Jean, you're a better person than me.
Jean has crotchety. You need to become crotchety, and then you can just say no to anyone for about anything.
Like, I'm sorry, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Not that I don't like a
She gives a new meaning to Iron Chef.
Because I do like those little mint cookies, you know.
I understand.
But I just can't take them home.
So, for me, Oreos, you could easily do that. Now, as far as the food labels go, they have until July 2018 to change the packaging. So you won't see this instantly. But Riley, I like your thoughts on that, when you get to double digits added sugar, you've really got to consider what is the nutritional benefit. Mm-hmm. What are you gaining from eating this? This could very well be a problem.
It is aesthetically, though, a better looking label. It's more well balanced.
Right. Before there was this huge, and people took great pride in the fact that there were no fat in these granola and these cereals that had no fat in them. There's no fat in the first place, and so it was just silly.
Fat-free, what are those little cookies with the fig Newtons? Fat-free fig Newtons. Well, there was none in there to begin with.
Nothing that had fat in them. Yeah, so fat-free crackers or things like that made no sense at all. But at any rate, this is a little bit more sensible. Rick, we've got now.
Am I allowed to talk now?
I need you back on the mic here.
Okay.
Diet After Divorce, Wall Street Journal, May 23rd. Ending a marriage apparently leads to a deterioration in men's diets, while women's diets don't change significantly. This was a study in social science and medicine. They looked at health of participants' diets by the amount of this was maybe unfair. They said the variety of fruits and vegetables consumed. That's health of the diet. I guess it's not unfair. That probably is health of the
That's
diet.
That's a pretty big part.
So if you reduce your consumption of fresh produce, you have a less healthy diet. Almost 12,000 participants, ages 40 to 80, they went initial health assessment in 1993. They rechecked them again in 2002. They estimated how much they ate among 11 fruits and 26 vegetables. And when the men and women became widowed or divorced, I don't know what is man, would he be widowed? I guess so. I don't
sure.
know. Compared with men who stayed married, those whose marriage ended reduced by about 25% their daily consumption of fruit and vegetables. Their diets became less varied. Now, Rick, this is what I'm going to ask you. When Mary leaves the house, does your diet become less varied? Because I will tell you right now, I would eat the same thing every single day if my wife is not around.
I cannot tell a lie. Yeah. I mean,
you eat?
Well, I mean, it depends.
Whatever.
I mean,
pizza?
No, I mean, a lot of times it's sandwiches for me. She will leave me with stuff to fix sandwiches. I will fix sandwiches.
If I'm in a hurry, my sandwich is a bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
So where everybody else says they take two pieces of bread and put something between them, I go for a bowl of cereal.
Really?
So this is surprising to you.
Now, you can make it in like 30 seconds if you're fast.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
There is speed.
There's no cooking. It's really easy to wash the dishes.
And you don't cook? You don't like to cook?
Well, no, there's no enjoyment of the meal.
I love to cook. I can't stand cleaning.
Really? You love to cook?
Well, I mean, I like cooking. It's fun. But, you know, you make messes and you got to clean it up.
I don't have time for it.
It seems like the time you spend preparing and the time you spend cleaning is like five times the amount of time you spend eating.
You don't think that's true? I think he makes a valid point that it takes longer to prepare the food than to eat it.
Well, it kind of depends on what you're fixing.
Fair enough.
It does take me
pick
a long time.
Any fruit or vegetable and tell me how to prepare that in under 20 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Chop. All right.
Olive oil. Hang on a second,
Riley. This is for Riley. Kale. How do you prepare kale?
So you're going to put the oven at 350. You're going to make some kale chips.
It's got to warm up.
Yeah. Okay. So as it's warming up, you're going to put them in a bowl. Olive oil. Nice little sea salt. By the time that happens, oven's heated.
You've now officially hit the time it takes to deliver the pizza.
Where are you at, though? I'm from Lexington. That doesn't correlate.
Okay, your oven's warm. You got the sea salt. You now have kale chips. Good
yes.
for you. You're going to eat that. That's your dinner. Is a bowl of kale chips.
No. You take the kale, you wash it, you put it in a salad spinner and spin the water out. 2 second job. Yeah. You know, and then you put it in, you take a skillet and you put a little bit of chicken broth and some onions or leeks if you've got them. Get that going and then you put your kale in there.
And see, right, what we're talking about.
Piece of cake.
I can whip that thing up in 30 seconds. Keep in mind, cereal, bowl, milk, eat.
No. Remember now, when we're talking about husband when wife is away or gone. We're not talking about just every day. We're talking about, you know, what am I going to do?
Let me ask you, and seriously, Riley or Gene, you would do this if your husband wasn't there, if there's no one else, you would say, you know, tonight we're going to do the kale. And you would fix all that for yourself.
Yeah. Actually, if I were going to be there by myself for like several days, I'd probably fix a big pot of soup.
Yeah. Take a run there.
Yeah.
Because that's easy to cook.
Yeah.
Takes a long time, right?
An hour later. I make really good soup.
I bet you do.
But then you would have like a big pot of soup and you could eat it like all week.
Yeah. My wife wouldn't appreciate it if I came over to your house and ate it.
If you make a big pot of soup, you got enough food for the week.
Yeah, so you can fix ahead for a week. I do understand that. But, again, to be honest with you.
We're talking about guys here.
Yeah, fixing ahead. I have never, ever in my lifetime. The only thing, I guess, I did grill one time, and we put the burgers in.
Tony, you're not going to want to hear this.
Okay.
There's been many times where I've ordered a bigger pizza than I needed, so I'd have some for the next day.
Right, that kind of planning ahead. That's the way we do it. But the idea that we would fix a week's worth of meals at one time, just you blow a perfectly good afternoon fixing those meals.
I don't agree. I mean, it's like chop, 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 throw it in there, and you're done.
No, she's right. You only lose half the afternoon. The other half you spend cleaning up.
No, you know, because you wash as you're cooking.
Yeah,
I
understand.
This, I'll pile up in
you sound like
sand.
My wife now.
Yeah, this study, they did not mention in terms of outcomes. That is, you know, did this affect the men's health? I mean, you certainly would think that it would, but it did it. This is the quote that I liked out of this. For this generation, born in the 1920s to the 1960s, this was the people they studied, food skills and behavior would have been highly gendered.
That's true.
With women having primary responsibility for shopping and preparing meals, says lead author Pablo Monsivais, senior lecturer at University of Cambridge Center for Diet and Activity Research. This may explain why the women who were single or became single did not show much deterioration. I will tell you, though, men, I mean, in all matters, it gets a lot worse.
And I have to let the record reflect that I am in no way, shape, or form suggesting that Gene is wrong. Gene is absolutely correct. So is Riley. They're both right. I just live in a different world.
I understand. First of all, I'd like to thank Gene Jones, registered dietitian and manager of clinical nutrition and services at St. Clair Regional Medical Center, for appearing on the show. Thanks, Gene. And also from the University of Kentucky, dietetic intern Riley Loy. Thank you, Riley. Rick, can you get us off the air?
Special thanks to our summer Moorhead State Public Radio producer, Tanner Boyd, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org. or just visit us on Facebook. Do a quick search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
the Health Matters website is not intended for a U.S. audience. This website describes our product, which has not been approved or cleared for marketing by the U.S. FDA.
Health Matters is a balloon, which assists with weight loss by helping you feel full sooner and eat less. This, along with diet and exercise, jumpstarts your efforts, proving that when it comes to losing weight, less is truly more.
The Health Matters treatment period is 12 weeks. During that time, the majority of patients in clinical trials reported meaningful weight loss. It's time to push back from the table. Our Health Matters balloons will help you push.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week on Moorhead State Public Radio as we discuss Hillary Clinton's dermatologic problems. But wait, are we making a mountain out of a molehill?
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.